Welcome to the inaugural episode of Time Code Dead Air, where we interview professional filmmakers with a horror twist. Today we have the pleasure of sitting down with Madison Wolf, star of The Conjuring 2, I Killed Giants, Man in the White Van, so many others. And we talked about her career starting from age 6 till today, how she got started, her time in the business, and her future as a producer.
It did. And then, I mean, some really old stuff like True Detective, Season 1, Trumbo, The Campaign. That's always like a fun moment for people. Like they realize that I'm the little girl like jamming out to ass and titties, and they love that. So, yeah.
That's funny. I didn't even put that together.
Yeah.
That's
I actually, like, funnily enough, I kind of get that a lot. Like, it's like a funny moment for people. But yeah, lots of stuff here and there.
So as a horror dork, I actually had no idea. Full disclosure, I met you via your, I guess, best friends or close friends.
Yeah. Yes, best friends, roommates.
Yeah. Oh, roommate, there you go. Yeah. I remember they were watching your dog one time. Like, I'm watching Madison's dog.
Yeah.
Then I put two notes, oh, wait, that's Madison. Yeah. And it was funny because right after that, I had talked to Warren Skeels, who did Men in the White Van.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, we should probably talk at some point in time because can use that. However, since most of the shit that I do is horror, I'm sure it gets annoying doing nothing but horror.
Yes and no. I love horror. My only caution, I guess, is that it's not the only thing I want to do, right? Like, it's no secret that I am very much involved in this world of horror and thriller, and I do love it. I think there's, like, it's so fun. There's so much to play with. It's so emotional, which is great as an actor, but I just, you know, I don't want to be limited to that.
Yeah, and so that's kind of what's cool about what you're doing right now. And I had never watched it until recently because I was like, oh, wait, there's a show out right now. And yet you die yet again.
I know. It seems like I'm, no matter what I do, no matter the genre, I'm always like dying in some horrible situation. Like, I just always go through it.
And so what really, I mean, your first thing was True Detective. Was that the first thing you were?
The first thing that I ever did was On the Road.
Oh,
with
okay.
Kristen Stewart and Amy Adams, and that shot here. And I think I got cast in that when I was, or I read for it when I was about 6 years old for Liz Coulon.
Wow. That's, I have a youngster that's 5 and I'm just like, he's barely capable of doing anything.
Yeah.
So that's impressive. What made you get into acting?
It was really accidental. I was at Audubon Park, and a local performing arts school had a promotional booth up for the kids. And actually, I was with my aunt, and she was like, oh, you're so gorgeous. You should be a model, you know, like all aunts are. And I was like, well, I don't know about that. But like this acting and dancing and singing, like those classes sound kind of fun. And my mom was like, my mom and dad were like, yeah, sure. Like you can take some classes and, you know, it's a fun little extracurricular activity after school. It'll help with your memorization and your public speaking, like never, ever thinking anything of it. And then I started taking classes, and eventually the teachers at the school were like, you're really great. You should try to get reps. You should go to LA, do the whole thing. And like by some miracle, my parents were like, okay, sure. Like, why not? Let's try it. And then I got signed fairly quickly. And yeah, I was about 6, and it was within a year or so I was working.
That's wild. And I mean, I'm sure you're sick of talking about it because everybody asks you all the time.
No,
you have to do that.
It's cool. It's such, you know, at the time I like, probably up until I was like 15, I really don't think that I had a true grasp of like what I was doing and how unique it was and how unique my situation was. I mean, just like kind of falling into it, falling in love with it so early, and then also being able to stay in regular school and like kind of split my time back and forth. But still like was able to do what I loved. It didn't hit me until later, like how cool that was. So now I don't really get tired of it. Cause I'm like, I have such an appreciation for how it happened, you know?
Yeah. Well, and It's funny. It's funny because I have a horrible transition where I say it's funny. So I'll probably say it 32 times now. There's got to be some sort of like, is it a support system that helps out whenever you're that young and having to do all those things while still in school and trying to do all that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's really, I feel like, what it comes down to. I mean, in my situation, I was just so lucky to have parents who, and a family who encouraged me to try everything. Like, acting was not like the only thing that I tried. Everything you could think of, I did it. Like when I was super little. Sports, soccer, volleyball, cheerleading, gymnastics, horseback riding, karate. Like, I tried everything. And all of those things, most of them were very short-lived. But A, my parents encouraged that. And then B, they always taught me, especially once I started finding some success in it, that like, that is not the end-all be-all. Like, they very much encouraged and pushed for me going to regular school. Not only going, but like, truly prioritizing that and like prioritizing my studies, prioritizing me having a regular social life, like through high school, through college. And then on top of that, you know, when you're a minor, it's up to your parents to juggle their schedules, be on set with you, travel with you. I mean, both my parents work full time. So like, that was a whole nother aspect of, you know, them doing it just a great job with it.
So I'm sure you're sick and tired of, because I mean, it's reprising your role recently again. Yeah. That I one of the things I will flat out say is that I never realized that the Conjuring had you in it, because you came off as naturally as a British youngster.
Thank you.
What was that, Atlanta or something? That, like, where did you actually go? Or did they just ask for you to audition for it? Or
how that was just a self-tape.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I've been studying under and taping with the same acting coach, Nicole Beret. She's very well known here. Honestly, throughout the entire market. She works with a lot of really amazing talent my age, a lot of girls. But anyway, I was taping with her. It was like any other audition. And I think I probably did 2 self-tapes for it. And then eventually, once it got close, they flew me out to LA. And I think they, at the time, they had some concern about the physical appearance, because obviously in the movie, I looked very different than what I looked like at the time. I mean, in real life, I was blonde, blue-eyed, American. And then in the movie, obviously, they cut and dyed my hair. I have fake contacts. I have fake teeth. I have a British accent. So when they flew me out to LA for that final round, and I knew that I was going to be meeting with James Wan, and I kind of knew that they had this concern, I ended up going sort of in character. Like, I dressed very 70s. I had this old wig from a different project that I did, and I went to the meeting and I spoke in a British accent like the entire time, to the point where James Wan eventually, like, he's like, okay, like, what do you really sound like? So yeah, it was like a fun process, but it started out like any other self-tape.
That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Me's not saying it's funny, sorry. I always but it's interesting because I'm so, and everybody is, I'm not the only one, so sick of the EcoCast system right now, because it takes away a lot of the audition. It takes away that whole getting to know the director and getting to feel what they want. And so it's kind of funny that that was a self-tape that actually led to it.
Yeah, it's actually been that way for most of my career. I mean, in the early days, when I was doing really pre-Conjuring, most of that stuff was local to New Orleans. So that's when I would go in for, you know, Ryan Glorioso and Meg Lewis and Liz and all these people. But after that point, it's all been self-tape, with the exception of, you know, you move forward and then for a chem read or that sort of last studio test or whatever, I'll usually go in person. But yeah, it's a love-hate relationship. It is, because it makes it so much more accessible, which is great. And, you know, we're in an age where, like, it's so much more competitive because it is so accessible. And there are certainly downfalls of, like, you don't get to have that initial in-person contact and all of those things. But it's also like, how great that we can be in New Orleans or in Mississippi or anywhere in the world and like not be so limited to having to be in LA, you know?
100%. I had someone, she did a Samsung commercial recently, and that was out of Korea. And it's like, yeah, you're in LA and you can read because you have to go to that. I guess you said like it's accessible. Yeah. You can read for anything, you can do whatever. And the only issue I ever have with it is that you get so far and then when it is time for a chemistry read and you do it and it's nothing like they wanted. Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of a letdown. You have to explain like, no, it's not you, but it is because unfortunately you went and read for it and they didn't want you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it does suck. I've had my fair share of situations like that. And, you know, unfortunately it's just like the name of the game. Like if you want to do it, it's just something that you have to sort of deal with and get used to. It doesn't mean that it doesn't like suck, but it's just something that you kind of have to, I feel like, prep yourself for. And I also have done like chem reads and tests, studio tests, like on Zoom. Like mm-hmm. there are situations where like, it's never in person. And, you know, that sort of thing, I feel like for like a chemistry read, I'm very pro. Like, how are you going to have chemistry through right. a screen? Like, you can't even tell if we have chemistry. But yeah, like I said, it's like there's good and bad stuff about it.
Yeah. And it's the industry is just dog shit right now. So it's not just that it's accessible, it's that it's accessible with a ton of people and there's so little going on mm-hmm. that there's a huge glut of people going for the same role and it's a nightmare at this point. One of the things that I always notice is that whenever the industry is in a downturn, the best thing to do is do something yourself.
Yeah.
And it seems like you've kind of started doing that. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question is, you started with acting, kind of just happened. Mm-hmm. Were you, while you're acting, kind of going, I kind of want to do this, but behind the scenes? Or what made you transition to where you went to film school and started trying to do your own thing?
Not right away. I mean, I started so young. All I knew is that I was like getting to do this really cool thing that I really enjoyed and felt like a really productive expression for me. It wasn't until I was older, like right about like entering into college. I think that's like the time where I seriously considered, you know, would I want to do this behind the scenes? Do I think I could? Should that be my major? I mean, granted, I like wrote stories my whole life, like, and made my cousins and my grandma and my mom, like everyone act out plays for me. And so like looking back, I'm like, the interest was definitely there, but again, it wasn't something that I truly considered until I was like going into college.
Interesting. And so what made you think of Loyola? Because I mean, there's not a lot of film programs locally, but mm-hmm. what specifically went with Loyola?
Well, to be honest, I liked the campus. I liked the area. I knew I wanted to stay in New Orleans because oftentimes when I film, I have to leave New Orleans, right? Yeah. So like I knew throughout college, I would kind of want, you know, my community and I would want to be home when I'm not filming. So yeah, I applied to Loyola and I like did a tour and the whole thing. And I just ended up really liking it and being like, okay, this seems like a good fit.
I was wondering that, 'cause I was thinking you probably had the option to go to a USC or mm-hmm. UCLA or something like that. So I was always wondering that, but that makes sense. You would want to say, you're already gone. So it's nice to have that little thing you can come back to and know that at least it's there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of, at least right now, people have asked me like, especially in recent years, why don't you move to LA? You don't want to be in LA. And it's kind of similar thinking in that I am already gone so often that if I were to pick up and move to another city, like I'd be wanting to come here when I was there anyway, you know, because yeah. I'm all over filming. So it's just nice to when I'm off to be here and with my whole family lives here, you know.
And is Hunting Wives in LA or is that somewhere else? It's
we shot season one in North Carolina.
That's okay. Because that's another thing is as the the variety of places. I mean, they're shooting all over the place right now.
Exactly.
It's kind of, Louisiana's kind of centralized. You can go to the East Coast, you can go to the West Coast.
Yeah.
And it kind of gives you that option as well to audition for Atlanta or for LA or for New Mexico or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of become a place where you can stay throughout the year and then just hop on a plane and go somewhere else.
Yeah. And I mean, at least in my own career, my own experience, I've only shot a handful of things in Los Angeles, you know, like a lot of things are moving to Europe now, like for better or for worse. I've shot a handful of things in Europe, all spread across the United States, Canada. So it's just so sporadic that, again, I don't feel like I have to be in LA, so I'm not going to be for now, you know?
That's a really good thinking, because a lot of people ask the same shit. It's like, oh, if you're an agent, you should be in LA. Yes, I should. I'm not even going to say that I shouldn't. But I don't just rep LA. So,
right. Like,
I need to be local if I need to talk to somebody here. I wish the industry would kind of get better here, but Atlanta, if I need to talk to people in Atlanta. So it does kind of give you that option. It also is a little bit different being acting and entertainment, because a lot of the artists that I rep, we have shit all over. So it's an interesting dynamic to just kind of look at, and I'm glad that somebody else kind of sees that, because it is definitely something that people always tell you got to move to LA, and it's not always the case.
Yeah.
And then since you were here, you went to school. What, I guess you've directed your own film.
Mm-hmm.
You've produced a couple. Mm-hmm. What is your long term position that you're trying to go? Or are you just trying to get in your hands on everything?
Well, if you would have asked me that question like a year ago, I would have said with certainty producing. I do think that it's a strong suit of mine, and still I really like it. But then I directed my own movie and I loved it. So I don't know. I'm kind of open to anything. I know that I want to continue directing and like direct again one day. I feel like, you know, maybe between the two, often they can and do go hand in hand, directing and producing, I feel. So.
What made you decide directing? Like, what was it about directing? You're like, oh my God, I like this.
I think it was a lot of things. I, for better or for worse, I'm someone who, I feel like I do really well in like a position of leadership, especially when it's like carrying out my own vision. And I really enjoyed that. Like, some people are great at it, but they don't like being in the position where you have to make all the decisions all the time. I loved getting to work so closely with like my other department heads to like also make those decisions. I loved that it was so collaborative. I loved like analyzing every single performance, and getting to talk to actors on like the flip side. You know, usually I'm the one receiving the direction and trying to carry out someone else's vision. So I think, I mean, I just loved getting to do the opposite of that. You know, like I liked being in charge of like what this project creatively was.
And that's a perfect transition to a question I did have, which is, you've had some good directors, probably had some bums that you don't have to name, but I'm sure there's some. Does that help whenever you're doing your own projects, as far as you know kind of what to do and what not to do from what you've experienced?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the only thing that I can do, is like think about my own experience and how I felt, again, on the receiving end, and what I really liked and what worked for me, and tried to emulate that in my own way. I think more than anything, the greatest directors that I've worked with always sort of have one thing in common, which is that they have a really fantastic attitude in the way that they lead. Like, they're really passionate and decisive and kind, and everybody wants to like be there and do this thing with them, right? So that's, I think, the biggest thing that I took from all of them that I've worked with and tried my best to like carry that through on my own project.
There's been a couple of people that I've worked with that are super A-list directors that have been just total rubbish. Mm-hmm. And then there's other ones that it's their first or second time have been amazing. Were you kind of feeling that being around other people in your school, kind of, because I mean, you've been on the producing side. Do you see that a lot of times where you want to be like, we're going to do it like this, and then, but you just don't say anything, or you do try to like help them out in that way?
I think not really on any of the projects that I've produced or been on set for, like, firsthand, because all of those projects were, you know, created and directed by a lot of my friends who I think are super talented and all have their own style and unique vision and didn't necessarily need my help at all carrying it out, you know? But yeah, of course, I've heard about things or observed quick moments on sets that I didn't work on for the full time. And I mean, yeah, you always have your opinions about it, but like, no, I'm never like saying that. I've never no, here's the thing. Like, if somebody asks or like seems open, absolutely, like, offer advice and like whatever. But especially, I feel like in a school setting where like we're all peers, I'm not going to be like the asshole. I don't know if I can say that, but like the one who's like, you know, I worked with so-and-so, like, you should really do that. Like, no, that's so annoying. I'm not saying, like, never tell anybody when they're clearly could use, like, some advice or, like, want your input. I'm, like, all for constructive criticism and being, you know, nice but blunt about, no, like, it needs to happen this way. Or, like, I don't like that. I don't want it that way. Hey, maybe you should try this because clearly it's not working. Like, I'm all for that. I just think, I don't know, especially in a school setting, I felt like it was something that I was always aware of. Like, I didn't want to be that person that was like, came in and like, I didn't want to be perceived as someone who thought like I was above anyone because I had these experiences or whatever, because I truly didn't feel like that. In fact, I got to film school thinking, you know, I can go in pretty confident. Like, I feel like I've grown up on sets. Like, maybe I'll have like a little bit of an upper hand here. And then I got there and like everyone was so smart and so talented and knew so much more than me about like the back end of things. I mean, it's great. Like, that's why I wanted to go. And you want to be in positions where you're not the smartest person in the room. You aren't the most knowledgeable. Like, you want to learn from other people.
That's awesome to have that attitude, because that's, I guess, what I was actually kind of asking, was I've been around the opposite, where it is people just like, don't better than that, you moron. So that definitely helps out to have that attitude. And it's funny, I jump around a lot, and it just hit me that, so you did Conjuring 2 when you were like 11 or something, right?
I turned 13 on set. Did you?
And you were having to do like contacts and teeth and everything the whole time.
Oh yeah, every day.
I'm just trying to figure out, that had to be kind of annoying to shoot as far as like the rules and regulations, huh? Like, mm-hmm. You have like 4 hours on and then have a break or whatever.
Yeah, let's see, I was 13. So I think it was more like six-ish hour. Like, it was something a little bit more generous than four. But yes, it was extremely difficult, especially being that, again, like, I was in real school and I had an on-set teacher who would proctor everything. And when I got off set, like, when I was in between setups or wasn't being used, I was in school, and then I would go directly back to rolling, and then I would go directly back into school. And then when I got home, I was doing homework and, you know, studying for my tests the next day. It was very difficult in that regard. Especially doing it for the first time at 13 at that capacity, because I had done it throughout my career with, you know, smaller roles, principal roles, on for a week, off for a week, whatever. But it's very different when it's like 3.5-4 months of trying to keep up with that.
And does that affect your performance at all? Like, I mean, looking back on it now, whenever you go to something, is it easier, or is it just like kind of almost distracting because you're not overthinking in your head and you're not kind of overdoing it? Or is it just like, it's whatever?
I think that I always took it very seriously. And I never, at least I tried my hardest, never to let it get in the way. And at that time, if I was prioritizing one thing, it was the movie. It was not school. As I've always been a really great student, but I remember filming that, you know, there were moments of like my mom being like, don't forget about school. Like, you have to keep up with school. So yeah, I don't think that it did. Like I said, I always took it very seriously. I think it's more like at that time, more so than ever, because it just felt like such a giant feat for me when I booked that role. Right. And I was so excited.
That's funny, because I guess the opposite of what you're used to hearing, where people are like, oh no, it kind of affected because I'm going back. We're like, no, I wanted to because it was awesome. And now I'm just like, ah, whatever. It's another role. Who cares? I can do a million of these.
Yeah.
So your last thing before Hunting, well, at least one of the last things that came out, was Man in the White Van. Mm-hmm. You had a bunch of people around you. Like, you had a really good supporting cast, as you've had in a lot of things.
Yes.
But it also wasn't a huge budget film. Mm-hmm. Do you notice a massive difference, like, between whenever you're producing something and doing that, and then whenever you're in like the low budget to the medium, how is it to kind of transition from each of those and having to still kind of, I don't know, stay in the same kind of mentality?
You mean as an actress?
As an actress, and then going into your thing, like into your own productions, where you're like, okay, we don't have the budget we have for this, but
yeah,
like trying to make that work, I guess.
I think now it is more apparent to me as an actress, because I have produced things and I'm a little bit more privy to the standards and the differences of when you're on like a huge budget versus no budget. And like, I've truly done it. I've been on like it all. I've been on gigantic budgets like The Conjuring, and I've been on like shorts that we have like $700 and like, that's it, you know? But I mean, I think the biggest difference is just having, at the higher level, you have more time. It's more, I don't want to say more relaxed, because it's never fully relaxed, and you never fully have enough time no matter how much money you have. But there is a certain comfortability at that super high level that, you know, making an indie film is just like, you're really just like bootstrapping and like trying your best to like pull shit together and like constantly just like crawling and like praying that things come together in the way you're thinking, and you're cutting a lot of corners and deciding which corners to cut. But I think that makes it kind of fun. There's a fun, it is, it's like, you have to try a lot harder, I think.
Does it ever annoy you as far as, because yes, 100% you're right about mm-hmm. that. A lot of times whenever you're trying to sell something or something that has low budget, mm-hmm. people like have to attach whatever like that. Does it get annoying, or do you have a bunch of people constantly just like, come do this, come do this, come do this? And you're just like, oh, that's cute, but I like need to focus on other things.
I wouldn't say a lot. I mean, I'm always intentional about that sort of thing and what I do. And I never, the budget of a project is not very often like a concern of mine necessarily. It's really about, you know, do I like the story? What are they asking me to do? Like, is it an acting thing that's been a bucket list item? Or is this a really good producing opportunity? Is it a good opportunity for me to learn? Do I really love the people involved? So, I don't know. I try not to be really motivated by budget. It's just about, like, honestly, what feels right.
And, you know? So as far as bucket list stuff, is there anything still on there that you're like, man, I wish I could have done that, but you didn't get to do?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the list is like forever long. I would love to do just like some real gritty drama. I think that's an area that I've always loved. Even like drama dystopian world. I would love to do, I would love to do more TV. I think and from an acting perspective, I'm really focused on that right now, because that's sort of the only thing that I haven't done, is like be a series regular on TV for like a whole season. So that is like an exciting prospect to me, but yeah.
As far as behind the scenes, what I know that you talked about directing before, from a producing level, what do you think makes you a good producer? Like, what kind of stuff are you, you had said before that you like, you think you can produce really well. What makes you kind of go towards a certain project, or makes you go like, oh, I can do this, I can focus on this?
Well, I think as far as like coming on to a project, again, I like come from it similarly to how I approach like taking acting jobs. Like, it's just like, am I invested in this story? Like, do I, especially when I'm thinking, when I have like my producer cap on, I'm thinking, you know, do I align with this style and this aesthetic? And is this something that I feel like I can really help the creator like carry out their vision, right? So it's not just like, oh, as an actress, like, do I fit into this puzzle? Like, am I good for like this one little piece? But rather as a producer, it's like, could I help this entire thing like really come to life? And I feel like I think I'm a good producer because I'm also very logical. Like, I'm a very logical person. I actually like don't mind the paperwork and the hoops and the assembling of the team and the communication. And I mean, even in school, like, I also was like an AD and I loved that too. Like, I am a very organized kind of type A person, especially when it comes to work. So I think that it makes me a stronger producer, because while all that is true, I also think that I'm like a super creative person. And like, I would like to think that I am good at understanding other people's vision and like their story and what they're trying to do. Because as a producer, like, yes, you're offering your own opinions and like ways you can improve upon the project, but ultimately, like, if you're not creating it, I'm all for like being like, okay, what can we do to like give you what you want, right?
So attracting to a project made you kind of create, was it Mad Wolf Productions?
Yeah. So I started the company in 2023, and the first project that we shot was a short called The World Is on Fire and I Just Want to Dance. And then very quickly went into pre-production for a handful of projects, including Acorn, Iowa, which I wrote, In the Light of a Miracle by O.J. Parker, that's premiering at NOFF, Echoes in the Heat, Gracia Sophia, and High Wraith by Kaylee Jacobs. So we kind of had like a little team going from school, and all kind of just like rotated positions and all helped out on all of each other's projects. But so yeah, we have all of those in the can, done, either doing the festival circuit or just finished the festival circuit. And specifically with The World Is on Fire and I Just Want to Dance, Paulette's movie, that film is about to do public distribution. So it'll be available in very shortly on Vimeo On Demand is where we're going to go first. And then it'll be more widely spread. And essentially, once the other shorts are done with their festival circuit, they'll kind of have the same route. And while simultaneously, I mean, we're all, you know, have features and pilots that we're constantly pitching and trying to get financing for. And I think the next thing that we go into pre-pro for will be a feature. So, yeah.
Is the Acorn, Iowa, the one you wrote, is also the one you directed?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Has that one premiered yet?
It has. It premiered at Indie Shorts Awards in LA, which was really fun. But we still have a lot of, you know, festivals that it's pending right now, whether or not we're going to be attending. But yeah.
What is the promotion differences between kind of promoting your own thing and having to go? Because, I mean, it's a big difference. So here's your list of things you have to do. Here's all the things you have to jump onto these podcasts or these interviews versus like trying to promote your own films.
Well, it's just a lot more work. When the same as anything in like indie filmmaking, it's like kind of completely up to you. People are only going to see your movie if like you push it out and like hopefully some fire catches and it spreads. And we're so excited and grateful to be like all of the shorts are in the festival circuit and getting a lot of good feedback in different areas and different festivals for different audiences, which is like exactly what we want. But yeah, it's just, it's more all encompassing. And actually Kaylee is like my right hand when it comes to, she's like so great at social media and like marketing and all that stuff. So she and I collaborate a lot when it comes to that. But yeah, it's just honestly like pushing out as much focused content as possible. You know, like we're not like throwing a bunch of shit out there, but it's as much as we can do, as fast as we can do, because that's like how social media works.
Yeah. Amen to that. And then, so as far as features y'all are going, do you actually have a couple of scripts in the pipeline, or what?
We do. We have two features, and then I'm also writing a TV pilot right now. So it'll really just be a matter of like what we get financed first. That will be the next one. Cause I think they're all great. Obviously one Grecia wrote one of the feature films. I wrote one of the feature films, and then I'm in the process of writing this pilot. So
are you trying to go like the sales agent route to get it sold up front, or are you trying to just raise the funds yourself, or how are you going nuts?
Well, at the moment it's more raise the funds ourselves. That's kind of where we found obviously the most success with our short films. I feel like that's a little bit of an easier, not easier. It's not easy. I want to completely, you know, retract that statement, but a more accessible, realistic route than like right off the bat. Okay. We've all done a few short films. It would be great if a sales agent was like, oh, we want to buy, you know, every film that you write from now on. I'd be ecstatic. But you know, with the TV pilot, I think we're going a little bit more of a traditional route, but we'll see. It's still like super early stages. So
it's funny because a lot of times whenever you start dealing with sales agents, we start dealing with distributors, it happens so easily and so quickly. And trying to find money is so goddamn hard.
It's really hard. I mean, yeah, it's the hardest part. Like if everybody had money, everybody would be doing it, you know?
That's a good way of looking at it. Yeah. And so whenever you're pushing the things, are you trying to direct one of these, or what's your overall goal for that? It's like if somebody says next year, where do you picture yourself?
That's a good question. I hope that like by next year, to answer your initial question, like ultimately producing, possibly acting in the projects as well. I would direct, especially the feature that I wrote, I definitely would direct it. But again, like it's so dependent upon if somebody did come in and say, we'll finance it, but we want someone else to direct it. Like I'm also not opposed to that, you know? So yeah, I don't know, but in the next year, I hope that I will be like at least getting ready to shoot one of these projects that, we're working on right now and like fine tuning and still in the writing process.
So the stories you're trying to tell, what are you kind of focused on whenever you're getting in, like whenever you're looking at something and going, I want to I want to write this down, or I want to produce this or make this? What kind of genre, what kind of stories are you looking to tell?
Yeah, it's, well, in the stories that I'm interested in telling in the way of like writing and directing and stories that really like ultimately come from me as far as putting pen to paper, it's a lot about teenage girls in like messed up situations. It's a lot of like dramedy. I'm really into that right now, of like dark comedy, satire. It's some thriller stuff, psychological thriller. But yeah, it's a lot in that vein. And as you saw with like Paulette's movie, I also love stuff like that. I find that it's not, because Paulette's film, The World is on Fire and I Just Want to Dance, is related in a way because it's this like experimental dystopian story about, again, like two teenage girls. So yeah, it kind of all over the place, but truly not a lot of horror and thriller, which I think people would possibly be surprised by.
You write what you know. It would make sense.
Yeah, and a lot of times I find like the characters that I write, or often the stories that I want to tell, it starts with like asking myself, what kind of character do I want to play? And like, not that I'm always writing for myself, but you know, I feel like I've been acting for so long. There is so many like bucket list things that like I want to play in this world or play a character like this. And then this goes back to what you said earlier. It's like, okay, well, if it's not happening right now, the project doesn't exist right now, I'm not auditioning for it, or I'm not booking it, then I'm just going to write it myself and, you know, get to have a hand in the creation of that, whether or not I end up actually acting in those projects or not.
You've done a lot of stuff that is just out there. Like Man in the White Van is you getting stalked by a white van, basically.
Yeah.
So if you've not had to deal with those situations, what is your kind of approach to, I mean, The Conjuring is like you're getting attacked by ghosts.
Yeah.
What's your kind of, everybody's got their own little thing. What's your kind of procedure towards putting yourself in a position of understanding someone?
Yeah, I think it's always a little bit different. It depends what the role requires. Something like The Conjuring is obviously a bit more extensive than even like Man in the White Van, which like neither of those situations I have experienced, like, thank God, anything remotely close to that. But like one of these characters, okay, it's in the 70s. Well, Man in the White Van is too, but she looks completely different. She's having these quite literally supernatural experiences. So I think the key for me is I always like to find a part of myself like in every character, or rather like simplify the story to like real like human themes. I mean, for such a large part of The Conjuring, I remember my audition scene is the scene where I'm sitting on the swing with Vera and I'm telling her, you know, like I can't sleep, like essentially like I'm so tired. I'm always like tormented. I feel like this outsider. Everyone at school is bullying me, like all these things. And if you just take that piece of it, you're like, okay, that as like a 13-year-old girl, like that I can sort of relate to a little bit. So it's finding those little like moments and pieces and then just using your imagination to expand it. Same thing with like Man in the White Van. Like such an integral part of the story, even though it is, again, in the 70s, she was much younger than me. I shot it when I was 19 and the character's 15, you know. I've never been stalked before. I've never been nearly kidnapped before. But such a large part of the story was like nobody would believe her, right? So it's finding those. And also, like, she's in high school. Like, she's having her first kiss. Like, I lived through all of that. Like, I can relate to that. So it's just making, it's like humanizing them and then just using your imagination to like expand.
I'm just laughing because the Hunting Wives storyline is so goddamn bizarre. Like,
yeah, it is. It's fun.
It is. It's just one of those ones of like, wait, what? This is, so this, I was like, okay, cool. This is fun. That's a little, but so that's got to be fun a lot of times whenever you're reading something, you're like, wait, what the does that kind of pull you into whenever you actually do want to do roles, as far as like reading the script and going like, this is kind of cool? Does that kind of direct you to stuff that you are taking?
Yeah, absolutely. But I will say, like, at the time when I signed on to Hunting Wives, I only got episode one.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. So I had no, I was really, every week we were like, or like whenever we were getting the scripts for like the new episodes, and we were like, oh my God. Like, oh my God. I remember like going into hair and makeup, and everyone was just like, did you read the new script? Did you read 107? It's so insane. Like, yada, yada, yada. So, but yeah, I mean, of course, when there's like some sort of crazy arc, for my character, where it's just a really enticing story, that's, and like something that I've never done before, that's like really what makes me want to like double down and do a project.
Yeah, American Horror Story was like that. It was week to week, like, because it was so on the like hush hush, whatever script would come in, I'd be like, wait, what the this is, I don't want to say that, but it was just like, wait, this is the direction we're going, okay. And then it was like, oh, Neil Patrick Harris can do a couple episodes, cool, let's completely forget what we're doing and then bring them in. So it was really weird.
Yeah,
but it was amusing because like, oh, let's see how y'all fix this, because this is going nowhere.
Yeah, and that sort of thing is really interesting about TV, and that I think it's such a notable difference between TV and film. So I grew up doing like a couple TV projects, but I think my head was mostly, I was most familiar with film. And typically, you know, it's like you have the whole script, you know the story. Sure, you're shooting out of order, but besides that, like you're pretty certain of what you're doing. But TV is just like kind of the Wild West in a lot of ways.
100%. Did you know, like, that always been part of the thing, that the whole Conjuring prep would be y'all at the end at the wedding, or was that just kind of thrown in there at the end?
I mean, I didn't know that that was going to be, I know, I that was like never in my mind as a thing, but it was very sweet, like getting to reprise a role that was obviously so monumental for me, not only in terms of my career, but also just a very pivotal moment in my personal life as well, and like for my personal growth. So it was sweet to get to return to her like 10 years later and see everybody and see James. And yeah, it's crazy. I can't believe it's been like so long.
It's also funny because you're not wearing teeth or anything like
yeah.
that.
So well, she's was, grown up.
Yeah, a couple of people.
She's grown into herself.
And they just didn't recognize you. They're like, what was that? I was like, that's not, like, oh. It's like, yeah, I know, it doesn't look anything, but
yeah,
kind of funny.
Yeah, it was funny.
Conjuring 2 is kind of, it was the first appearance of the nun. It was one of those things where the first one had hit. Let's see if the second one could actually have some juice. Mm-hmm. And it did. So a lot of people, I mean, you look back, you got Johnny Depp in Nightmare on Elm Street. You got Kevin Bacon in Friday the 13th. You got Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween. You've got a whole, I mean, everybody kind of starts, I hate to say it, but almost everybody starts with a low budget, and this wasn't a low budget, but it was a horror film. Mm-hmm. When you look at where you have gotten to at this point in time, how do you kind of look at it when you look back and go, damn, I actually have something that no matter what is an iconic film that I can always go back to and see and know that people actually were like touched by it?
It's very, very cool. It's like also kind of weird. Like, I can't believe that I did that at 13, and even though I knew when I was doing it, it felt so important to me and I took it so seriously, and sure, it felt huge. But even looking back, like, again, I still don't think I like fully understood like the potential impact that it could and would ultimately like end up having. And it's very endearing. I mean, every single day I'm tagged in posts, and you know, occasionally people will come up to me, and still, like, even like, I don't even know how like people recognize me, but still I get so many compliments, and it's incredible to be part of like such a beloved franchise, especially in that way, because it was such a challenging character for me, which is like what I love to do. So yeah, it's really cool and weird to think about that people still care about it and hopefully will care about it for a long time. And I think that James Wan is like incredible. So
for people who do want to learn more about your upcoming projects and where to, you know, get in touch with you. So for people who are looking more into what you got in the future, where can they find you? Where, as far as Instagram, TikTok?
Yeah, Instagram and TikTok is just Mad Wolf Productions. Mad and then Wolf spelled with an E, like my last name, Productions. And if you're on there, you can just get all the information. Hopefully we'll have screenings coming up soon. Paulette's movie, The World is on Fire, will be publicly distributed very soon, and then closely followed by my film, Acorn, Iowa, and then Oliver's film, In the Light of a Miracle. Just socials is the best way.
Are you excited that you're getting to actually start showing these to the world? Like, is that kind of exciting to you?
Absolutely. I'm so excited, and I feel like I've gotten some comments or whatever, like, kind of hurry up, like, we've been waiting for so long. And I feel that too. I'm like, I feel like I've been kind of working on this and nurturing these projects for so long. I'm very excited to get them out into the world and hear what people have to say, but also move on from them in a way, you know, as much as I love them, I'm ready for them to be like, okay, like, here are sort of, you know, our first set of projects, kind of like the trial run, or like, you know, we're still very much learning, of course, throughout all of these films. And how great is it to like have it be public and then also get to carry on what we learned and like move on to bigger and better things, you know?
Yeah, there's nothing better than moving on from a project. Mm-hmm. It's always like, all right, cool, this is great. Yeah. Got some other shit coming up.
Yeah, and all of these projects are so special to me and to all of us, because they're all, you know, our projects that we made for our senior thesis, so.
And this is your first year that you don't have to worry about school, isn't it?
Yes.
Go enjoy the happy life of freedom and yes. Working and trying to move on.
Absolutely.
And thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for
having me. Looking forward to checking out your films in the very near future.
Thank you. Thank you so much.